Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Resilience by Design: How to Survive and Thrive in a Complex and Turbulent World by Ian Snape and Mike Weeks. Narrated by Mike Chamberlain. Publisher's Note: In this audio edition, you will hear references to figures and other visual materials present in the print and e-book formats of the book. Stress is a global epidemic. As part of its 2019 Global Emotions Report, Gallup asked 151,000 people in 143 countries about their stress levels. The day before the polling was carried out, 35% of people globally said they experienced a lot of stress. The highest reported stress by country was Greece at 59%. With the U.S. ranking in the top 10 at 55%, with Uganda also at 55%. Clearly, there is much more to being stressed than geography, poverty, or war. If stress is the global epidemic of the 21st century, then resilience is the cure. Resilience is the ability to prepare for, respond to, and adapt to incremental changes, challenging, difficult, and disruptive situations, and major upheaval or catastrophes. Resilient people make sense of their external world in ways that are highly resourceful, both for themselves and for others. About this book: As humans, it can sometimes seem that we're flawed by quirks of evolution, each seemingly destined to experience a lifelong roller coaster of ups and downs, joys and sorrows, gains and losses, health and disease, stress and resilience. One popular Eastern philosophy goes as far as saying, "All life is suffering." We disagree. Suffering may be the experience for some people, sometimes, but our view, backed by scientific evidence, is that we can create a better life and become more resilient to life's ups and downs. We are not predestined to suffer, or in fact predestined for anything. We each have agency, and we can craft and shape our continually evolving sense of identity, lifestyle, and the contexts we inhabit. We agree that people are experiencing unprecedented pressure to respond to rapid change, increasing resource demands, and uncertainty. Reported cases of stress, burnout, anxiety, depression, and a multitude of connected illnesses are on a steady rise in most of the modern world. However, as we will reveal, we always have a choice in how we respond to pressures, demands, and uncertainty. For millions of people, learning how to be resilient isn't just a benefit for the constantly shifting demands of their work. Resilience can improve every element of their lives. With the world changing so quickly around us, this is no longer just nice to have. It's absolutely essential if we are to survive and thrive in a complex, turbulent world. We've given talks to, trained, and coached thousands of people around the world, including during humanitarian disasters, in the extremes of Antarctica, and in the jungles of the Amazon. We've helped people develop resilience everywhere from the slums of Haiti to the polished boardrooms of major corporations. Across these varied domains, we've modeled, studied, and interviewed individuals who stand out. We call these people the resilient elite. They range from mountain guides and Olympians, special forces soldiers, mental health nurses, correctional officers and first responders, to entrepreneurs and scientists. The resilient elite are also hidden in plain sight. They are the single mums and dads bringing up disabled children with very little external support, or the elder care workers who deal with grief and loss on a daily basis and somehow manage to leave this behind when they step through their front door. One fact we discovered again and again: there is no such thing as a stressful situation. How well we survive and thrive is entirely down to how we perceive ourselves and the world around us. Our resilience depends on our ability to access the behavioral patterns that have enabled our species to sense, respond, adapt, and thrive through both feast and famine, calm and chaos. Resilience by Design is the world's most detailed and evidence-based how-to manual for resilience. It bridges the gap between neuroscience theory and practical techniques that can be used every day. We wrote it for the people we care about, the people we love, and the people we have yet to meet who might want to change their lives for the better. We wrote it because, right now, more than ever, millions of people are living in uncertainty and need a guide for the unknown paths ahead. Whether you're a formal leader in an organization or community, or an informal one in a family or social setting, you can use the techniques we cover in this book to simultaneously develop resilience for yourself and to help those around you. Every input into the complex system that is our world affects all of the connected parts, often in unpredictable ways. You'll find that, by developing personal resilience, you'll become a catalyst for positive change in all the contexts in which you play a small or a large part. By becoming resilient, we can positively influence our families, friends, work colleagues, and even new acquaintances to become more resilient as well. As you listen, you'll learn how to perceive the world differently, how to think and act differently at work and across other situations. If you want to bring resilience to a challenging home life, or if you want to excel in whatever field you choose, this book will help. This book can be listened to from start to finish, or you can skip around, dipping in here and there for a story that draws you in, exploring some of our research, or experimenting with an activity, or adopting time-tested techniques. Our approach is practitioner-led. Our priorities, program design, and the structure of this book reflect what resilient practitioners actually do when operating under pressure or in a crisis. Theory-backed. We present the scientific findings from neuroscience, psychology, complexity theory, neurolinguistics, cognitive science, and philosophy, where these fields help to make sense or explain what practitioners actually do. Rather than leading with theory, we lead with practical advice. This is a conscious choice. We believe that much of the published theory on resilience is disconnected from real-world application. Evidence-based. The techniques we present are tried and tested, and we have tracked evidence for efficacy in individuals, teams, and organizations. By using the techniques we'll cover in this book for as little as 5 minutes per day, you'll be able to develop entirely new thinking skills. By practicing these skills, you'll find that they will arise reflexively in situations that you might have previously responded to with a stress response, or with anxiety or confusion. No matter where you presently are between stress and resilience, it's our intention to inspire you and the people you are connected with to take personal responsibility for your life and your choices. It is only when we take responsibility that we can begin working toward living our best life, which is adaptable to all circumstances. We invite you to take a deep breath, forget everything you think you know about stress, switch to a state of curiosity, and allow us to show you how to develop your own elite-level resilience by design. For more information about resilience training, info@frontlinemind.com, frontlinemind.com. 1. Resilience. Stressed or confused? In the first half of the 20th century, the researcher and medical doctor Hans Selye brought to popular use the term stress as a biologic response. Since then, the original concept and meaning of stress has mutated. We often misuse the word stress in the context of both our health and our relationship with the external world, especially our immediate environment. Stress often describes the cause or specific environment, such as the workplace or traffic jams on the motorway. For example, it's a stressful workplace, or the traffic on the motorway is stressful. Stress is used to describe the effect, the mechanism of injury, or the process of doing. For example, he winds me up, or the traffic is doing me in. Stress is also used to describe the effect, the felt state of being. For example, I feel like I'm going to explode. The World Health Organization has a simple and precise definition of workplace stress. Workplace stress is the response people may experience when presented with work demands and pressures that are not matched to their knowledge and abilities, and which challenge their ability to cope. Stress, then, is a response to pressure and demands, just one of a range of possible responses available to us. Unfortunately, the relationship between the demands and pressures of the workplace, or any situation, and the incidence of stress, has been linked through causation. The inside-out, upside-down view of workplace stress. When people talk about stress, they often assume a direct causal relationship between the external context and a person's internal response. For example, Metabank describes how tight deadlines or job insecurity cause stress. This kind of thinking permeates the scientific literature on stress. Studies have linked the number of deaths firefighters witness to incidences of PTSD. Burnout syndrome has been linked causally to intensive care unit workplaces. The list goes on and on. We are told that events from persistent abuse, exposure to death and violence, working with trauma and suffering, through to bullying or unrealistic workloads, cause stress. This is the outside-in view of stress. Thinking in this way creates victims by placing the blame on external factors that we're told are sources of stress. This ignores the role of personal choice in a largely unconscious creative process of responding to external stimuli. We look at stress differently. We view stress inside out and upside down. People create felt states of being, and then they call these emotional states stress. This stress is not external. It is internal, a response that is generated based on our unique perception of the world. The term stress is inappropriately applied to both the cause or environment and effect or mechanism, and it is also used in a highly ambiguous way to describe a variety of states that some people create unconsciously to cope with challenging environments. Some people, especially those who believe stress is bad and is caused by their external environment, create a state that might be characterized by tightness in the chest, restriction of blood vessels, high blood pressure, and down the track, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, and premature death. Others use the term stress to describe states of heightened response to challenge that include the opposite physiological characteristics. The terms distress and eustress have been used to describe these responses. Although in detail, everyone creates stress in unique or idiosyncratic ways. Indeed, people respond in many different ways to the same environment or situation, often without the label stress. Some people are able to cope with all sorts of challenges. Some people even cope well with bullying, threats to physical safety, or exposure to potentially traumatic events such as death or extreme human suffering. However, as the challenges or risks go up, so does the probability that more and more normal people will experience coping difficulties in environments for which they are ill-equipped. In these circumstances, many people respond with distress as their otherwise resilient state fails to cope. Hence, the correlation between risk and stress. Correlation is not causation. If we temporarily accept the view that resilience in a population of people follows a normal or Gaussian distribution, we would have three groups of people. Sadly, experts use these sorts of statistics to define what is normal or not normal, sometimes with adverse consequences for anyone that is different in some way. The lowest 5% or so we might call fragile. It doesn't take much to exceed their coping threshold. They are not well suited to frontline work or high-pressure roles, and they might respond poorly to life's challenges. The majority, 90% of people, by statistical definition, are normal. Most in this group have either above or below average resilience. The highest 5% or so, the resilient elite, could also be called anti-fragile. These are the people who you would ideally like to put forward for the most demanding situations. They are, of course, relatively uncommon. It's important to remember that resilience is not fixed. Many people go through periods when they are more or less resilient. Lifestyle risk factors can add up. Multiple lifestyle risk factors can easily add up in ways that challenge resilience. The workplace is one context that commonly overwhelms resilience strategies, and very few organizations effectively screen for resilience. This often leads to a mismatch, where the demands, pressures, risks, and threats exceed the normal or average employee's ability to cope. Some common workplace risk factors include overwhelming workload, insufficient resources to do the job, bullying, threats to physical well-being, poorly defined KPI targets, lack of transparency, unsocial rosters, excessive overtime. Collectively, these workplace risk factors can easily add up. Nearly half of frontline employees report being depressed, anxious, stressed, or having PTSD. These are mostly normal people who are operating in an environment where their current ability to cope has been exceeded. Resilient people create healthy workplaces and lifestyles. In our view, it is best to restrict the term stress to the description of an internal state of response to the external world. The term is misleading when used to describe either the external environment as a source or cause of stress, or the imagined causal link between stimulus and response. Continuing to use the workplace as an example, if there were a cause-effect relationship between workplace and stress, it would more likely be an upside-down one. Stressed-out people create high-risk workplaces. Resilient people create healthy and productive ones. It is better to think of states such as stress and the broader concept of personal resilience as embodied responses occurring in complex systems. Schools, workplaces, shopping malls, and even homes are examples of complex systems that change as a consequence of feedback based on our interaction with them. We can take two approaches, preferably simultaneously, to bust the stress epidemic and develop resilience. 1. Train every individual to become more resilient in their responses, recognizing that this is an inside-out process. In this way, the new normal becomes skewed toward resilient. 2. Reduce lifestyle and workplace risk factors, such as financial overcommitment or exposure to poor management practices, thereby lowering the threshold required for personal resilience. Importantly, resilient people who choose their emotional states are in the best possible position to create a lifestyle that supports their intentions and supports others around them to do the same. Resilience by design. Throughout this book, we direct attention from unresourceful states like distress to the concept of resilience. Personal resilience is the ability to prepare for, respond to, and adapt to change. This could be incremental change, challenges, difficulties, or disruptions, as well as dramatic upheaval or catastrophe. Resilient people make sense of their external world in ways that are resourceful to them. They perceive differently from those who stress over similar situations. Provided that the response is properly calibrated, stress, anxiety, fear, or any other state can sometimes be appropriate at the right intensity in specific situations. If stress is a signal to take action, and we do take action, it serves us well. If anxiety alerts us to prepare for the future, and we do prepare, it serves us well. If fear warns us of a threat, and we respond with appropriate caution, it serves us well. Any one of these states can be overdone, though, resulting in paralysis, or down the track, burnout, ill health, and early death. Our challenge is to develop context-appropriate states with an intensity that matches the needs of the moment. When we give states an emotional label, or worse, a diagnosis, all we are doing is communicating with others in a form of shorthand. Whether or how we are understood by others is always contingent on their own experiences. Resilient people have access to a wide range of states, opening up the possibility for an equally wide range of responses. The more possible responses you can draw on, the greater the chances that one of them will meet the challenges and risks of the situation you encounter. Confidence to the point of arrogance, or overdone stoic attitudes such as toughing it out no matter what, can end up with a result of catastrophic failure. Resilience by design unlocks the creative process of personal resilience. To support the listener in doing this, we present research-backed, practical material in what we hope is an engaging and thought-provoking format. Keywords that are commonly used to describe states of resilience are flow, confident, in control, good stress, edgy, calm, excited, connected, and even bitchy. Happiness is not essential for resilience and high performance. Ian, you won through the first four rounds. What happened in the fifth? Carmen, I didn't do my usual mental preparation routine. Ian, what were you thinking that you didn't prepare the same way? Carmen, I felt good. Ian, is feeling good an important part of your high performance state? Long pause. Carmen, no, when I fight at my best, I don't feel good. I feel bitchy. Carmen Marton, three-time Olympian and 2013 Taekwondo World Champion. The Four Choices Model. To enable people to better appreciate where they are placing attention in their response to their environment, whether professional, relational, or social, we created the Four Choices Model. 1. Stay stressed. The first choice is to stay stressed. Choosing to do nothing about stress is choosing to remain stressed. It is a legitimate option, albeit one that has risks. Stress is linked to 6 of the top 10 leading causes of death. Blaming external circumstances and choosing not to accept personal responsibility for our well-being is akin to praying to win the lottery without buying a ticket. We also occasionally meet people who have strong secondary gains for remaining in states of acute or chronic stress. For example, they might be receiving support in the form of workers' compensation or perhaps help from their family. Remaining in a state of stress may actually benefit them. Often, these responses are entirely unconscious. Do not confuse such responses with conscious manipulation and feigned ill health for personal gain. 2. Develop resilience. The second choice is to develop resilience, which gives us access to a wide range of resourceful states, including flow, excitement, confidence, calm, and a feeling of being fully present. It might even mean temporary anger or frustration, or a determination to force a change. 3. change the nature of the environment you are in. The third choice is to change your external environment. In the workplace, this can be done by constructively reducing risk factors such as unrealistic workloads or a poor relationship with your manager. In your community, this could mean getting involved with local youth initiatives to reduce crime or planting communal gardens. If you have already developed resilience, this option becomes easier, as those with resilience often have increased agency, which allows them to better shape their environments. 4. Leave. The fourth choice is to change the external environment by getting out of it. Many people quickly discover new options and possibilities when they operate from a position of resilience, and leaving is one highly effective strategy. Do not confuse leaving with quitting. Taking personal responsibility for our own health and well-being, even if it means a drastic change to where you work or live, is very important for resilience. Sometimes the last resistance we encounter here is a belief that the situation a person finds themselves in is not fair. Being bullied is a good example of this. The choice then comes down to pragmatics, such as balancing the likelihood of constructive change or winning a legal case with the consequences of prolonged stress, a massive legal bill, and the potential downsides of change, such as less pay in a new job, or swapping familiarity for uncertainty and a new adventure if you relocate. Micro-narrative. Failure to bounce. Dominic Baker. Dominic Baker is the newly appointed CEO at Cricket Tasmania. 3 months prior to this interview, Dom was off work, burned out, with nothing left in his resilience bucket. As part of his road to recovery, he trained in the techniques covered in this book. I've always viewed myself as the person who can fix what others cannot. The bigger the challenge, the better. And yet I got myself to a level of burnout where I had to acknowledge it was going to become unfixable. I was like a ball that had gone flat and no longer bounced back. I asked myself, do I change my environment altogether? Or, like many people, do I stay trapped and stressed? Some people run their resilience buckets so low that they become empty, after which you'll see major mental health issues arise. Before that happens, it's important to self-examine in an honest way. For me, exhaustion set in, constant second-guessing, anxiety and panic that came with not being able to succeed. My body operated at a heightened defensive level for far too long. I stopped spending quality time with my family and friends, isolating myself from my family because I didn't want to put them through what I'd gone through that day. I never wanted to talk about work when I went home. It was bad enough going through it the first time, let alone a second time with my wife. I didn't sleep or exercise. I did nothing to stay resilient. I thought I could fight through it all, even though the signs were there that it wouldn't end well. When I removed the blinders, so many opportunities opened up to me. It's remarkable how quickly the human body and brain can recover from situations of high stress and low resilience. Remarkable how struggling to get out of bed to face a new day can become rising with new energy to face the day's challenges. By taking a mental health program and simply changing my breathing, my confidence was restored. I no longer had the feeling like someone was standing on my chest all day. Just learning the ability to breathe correctly and center myself, the clarity that came from that is unbelievable. I think that people often feel uncomfortable in the workplace to talk about their mental state, but it's important to work out how to put air back into the ball so you can bounce back once again. I took 6 weeks off, and I needed every day of it. Time off allowed me to think, to really hit the ground running when I came back. I went straight back into an environment that really hadn't changed a lot. What had changed, really, was me, not the environment. I needed that 6 weeks to ensure that I was ready to cope, that I had enough coping mechanisms, that I was well-practiced and well-versed and confident with those. It gave me a completely different outlook when I went back into the exact same situation. Activity. Resilient at my best.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?